Friday the 19th, I believe. Is that correct? And we're talking about page 4 right now, bottom page 4, of the first overhead handout of looking at chemistry, neurobiology. All right, and we're talking about the Schwann cells and the oligodendrocyte and the astrocytes. Just really very, give us a view of their purpose and their location is the idea here for that. All right, so then we go on. And we have, that was page 4. And let's see if I can find page 5 without too much hauling around. There we go, page 5. This is some more information about the astrocytes. Again, that provides the blood-brain barrier and the skeleton necessary to provide the stability of the voids between neurons. The oligodendrocytes and myelin producing cells in the central nervous system. The Schwann are the same in the PNS. And as you know, so you can see here, the Schwann does have different behaviors. The Schwann versus the oligodendrocyte. The Schwann actually, the cell itself wraps itself around the axon and does that in a spiraling fashion to make layers and layers of myelin, the insulation for the nerve cell axon, whereas the oligodendrocyte has a variety of processes that can wrap themselves around the axons of more than one axon per nucleus. So you can see here from this diagram under letter B where they diagram how the spiral is wraps itself around, and then letter C is the oligodendrocyte. Let's see here. And of course, the purpose of the myelin sheath, whether it's offered by the oligodendrocyte or the Schwann cell, acts as an insulator, electrical insulator, enhances the conduction of the action potential. And we're going to talk about the action potential in more detail in the next handout. And it enhances the conduction of the action potential to the nodes of Ranvier. And that's where the action potential is continued or amplified. And the conduction of the action potential is saltatory. That means it moves more quickly by leaping from mode to mode, as it says here. The myelination begins to advantages. It travels faster, and the metabolic energy is much less because you only have to worry about the various nodes. Yes?
If it's faster using
saltatory
convection, jumping over the myelin, then why?
Not over. Well, go ahead. Not over, but yeah.
But then why is the myelin there to increase convection?
Well, no, it's it. Let's see here, kind of over. It actually is not, how can I say this, not over. Here's the axon, and I'm going to put in a couple of Schwann cells. It'd be easier to understand with Schwann cells, but anyway, it doesn't matter. So Schwann cells wrap themselves around this and around here, and then you've got these layers of myelin because of the wrapping. Then you got a known of Ranvier, then you got more wrapping, and you got the more of the Schwann cell and so on. Now, what actually happens is if I could blow up the region right there between the axon and the Schwann cell, if I could blow that up, here's the axon. And a small distance away. In other words, that the Schwann cell wraps itself around the axon, but it's not necessarily so tight that there's no gap between the axon and the Schwann cell. So you got this, the Schwann cell as the myelin here. And I'm not spelling myelin correctly, but at any rate, So there's this gap that exists between the axon and the myelin sheath. That gap then exists to, how can I say this? Reduce the volume, reduce the number of ions necessary for the voltage to be conducted. That if this myelin sheath was not here, how can I say this? And you had this change in voltage come along. The change in voltage has to do with the voltage, the charge between the membranes. The membrane has a positive charge and a negative charge, and it switches as that voltage moves along that pathway. If you didn't have this myelin sheath here, the number of ions that would have to be switched in charge would increase dramatically. So by making a microscopic gap here between the membrane of the axon and the membrane of the myelin sheath, it reduces the quantity of the voltage that has to be switched, because the volume and the insulation of the myelin sheath helps make that voltage change more sensitive. So you need less of a voltage to make that inversion, that shift as it goes along, as the action potential moves along the axon membrane, because the myelin sheath is there. That the change in the voltage doesn't have to be as large in magnitude. And along with that, because of this gap that's in here being relatively, has a low volume of materials in it, and directed too, it's not allowed to diffuse away or be interrupted by random proteins that might have a different charge in there, because they capture that material, the charges in between the gap of the axon and the myelin sheath, then it can change faster as well. Not only do you not need as big a change in voltage to have it travel along that membrane, the axon membrane, but the speed at which it changes is also quicker, because there's less interfering compounds, materials from the interstitial fluid interfering with that. It's just like it has its own little individual subway conduit, and if it's not interfered with by other traffic or other materials, that voltage change can move quickly. That's how I would describe it.
So that is
saltatory. The myelin sheath creates a situation where the change in the charge that represents the action potential is reduced it can be reduced in magnitude, and it does not have as much interference from outside materials, therefore it can move more quickly. So it increases the speed and reduces the voltage necessary to make the change. That means the gaps between the nodes of Ranvier can be larger. If their myelin sheath was not here, or if some less efficient sheath was there, the nodes of Ranvier don't create enough voltage to get it all the way down, because there is some decay in the voltage. It's not a perfect conduction. There is some decay in the voltage as it moves along the axon. And if the myelin sheath disappears or is damaged somehow, that transmission gets interfered with significantly, and depending on the amount of damage, and you can have some serious diseases. ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, is a damage to the myelin sheath through a genetic, it's an autoimmune disease. And you can die of it, because it eventually interferes with the autonomic nervous system and you stop breathing. Was that helpful? Did that answer your question?
Yeah, but then the whole axon is myelinated, it's not faster. So I know how myelination can be
Well, if you mean the whole axon is myelated, then it's not faster. You mean compared to what?
Well,
being unmyelated?
No, compared to having your nose in between.
Being slightly myelinated.
I mean, like, you know how you have myelination
node? Right, right.
So, like, if the whole thing is myelinated, it's not as fast as when there's been nose.
How do you know that? Well, that's what they told. This is what they're guessing too. Not as fast. Whole myelinated, not as fast.
It's okay.
Well, no. My explanation for this is this myelin sheath and the action potential is not a perfect conduction. It's not a superconductor. It decays as it moves along. And so you can have a situation where, the voltage, if it was completely myelated, the voltage might run out before you get to the next node of Ranvier. But I'd never heard that a single myelin, if the entire axon was myelated, it would be slower than if it was. Interesting. Yeah. That you got that from Dr. Stout. Okay. I should go talk to him about that. Be interesting. No. You're probably not. No, you're not. Okay. Well, anyway, we'll go on. You get the idea. So here's an electromicrograph of that. Make sure you read the caption. There's a lot of helpful information in the caption. Let's take a look at the action potential of the neuron. Again, if you've had systems, you've probably gone over this in more detail than I'm going to be able to go over it. But that's all right. You get to hear my point of view from it. Multicell organisms control cell volume by altering their intra. What does intracellular mean? Within the cell. Concentration of small cations. The macromolecules. Name a macromolecule within the cell. Or a class of macromolecules in the cell. Phospholipids, perhaps, yes. Thinking more generally, proteins. Proteins would be a class of charge. Then you also have the other macromolecules might be including the nucleic acids, the RNA and the DNA, but especially the proteins. Okay, but the proteins, as you know, have plenty of charges on them, and there have to be a lot of countercharges to it. The macromolecules themselves do not significantly contribute to the intracellular osmolarity. Now, does that statement make sense to you? If you recall, osmolarity is a... Oh, no, now I've forgotten. Is a physical characteristic dealing with just the number of particles, not their nature. Oh, it's a colloidal effect. Colloidal effect. In other words, that osmolarity doesn't matter what the nature of the particle is. It just has to do with the actual number of particles that are there. It can be positive charges, negative charges, or no charges, but it's the number of particles that are there that make all the difference. But their counterions do. In other words, that the proteins, there are not very many proteins relative to the counterions, but there are a lot of counterions because they're all the positive and negative charges on the surface of the protein, the potassiums and the chlorides and so on, sodiums and the chlorides, I should say. The cells control their osmolarity by pumping out inorganic ions, especially to lower the interior concentrations to match the exterior osmolarity. All right, so you need to read this diagram right here. Okay. And the idea of the Donnan effect. All right. The osmolarity of the extracellular fluid is mainly due to small inorganic ions. These leak slowly across the plasma membrane into the cell. If they were not pumped out, and if there were no other molecules inside the cell that interacted with them so as to influence their distribution, they would eventually come into equilibrium with equal concentrations inside and outside the cell, and the cell would be dead. However, the presence of charged macromolecules and metabolites in the cell attract these ions, giving rise to the Donnan effect. It causes the total concentration of the inorganic ions and therefore their contribution to osmolarity be greater inside than outside the cell at equilibrium. So everything inside the cell attracts the charges from outside the cell. The concentration of these particles inside the cell increases, and water then would have a tendency to move into the cell to try to match the activity of the osmolarity, and bingo, you'd have a problem. You'd have a swollen cell that would eventually bust. Animal cells and bacteria cells control these intracellular osmolarity by actively pumping out inorganic ions such as sodium. So the cytoplasm contains a lower concentration than the extracellular fluid, therefore compensating for their extra organic compounds, solutes. How does this happen, ladies and gentlemen? Well, welcome to the one of the most common and most important, although there are many enzymes that are important in life, but one of the most common and yet vital enzymes in your body, the sodium-potassium ATPase pump, found in virtually all animal cells, including bacteria, creates this electrogenic imbalance. The relative charge of the interior and the exterior of the cell is not the same. And notice the relative concentrations of sodium, potassium, chloride ions, and organic anions. This diagram illustrates a nerve membrane, but it essentially is the same for all of them. You have the extracellular space and the cytoplasm. You've got a voltmeter here that's measuring the voltages inside versus outside. And inside versus outside means that the inside is more negatively charged at equilibrium conditions, living but equilibrium conditions, that the outside is negatively charged, essentially. There is a pump called a sodium-potassium ATPase pump that uses ATP. Notice this A and the three Ps going to A and two Ps and a P down there. Uses ATP to pump sodium out and potassium in. The size of the circle illustrates the relative concentration. All right, so so there's a lot more sodium outside than inside, a lot more potassium inside than outside, and a lot more chloride outside than inside, and a lot more organic anions inside than outside. But notice the organic ions cannot get out. There is a chloride channel, there is a potassium channel, there is a sodium channel. Now, under most conditions, these channels are partially or completely closed. They always leak a little. They're not perfect. But the body readily compensates for the leak of both the potassium, the sodium and potassium, and the chloride channels by having continual pumping. If this pump quits, you're dead. You need to know the relative concentration of sodium, chloride, the sodium, potassium, the chloride, and the organic anions, and the relative voltage at equilibrium or homeostasis. It's positive on the outside, negative on the inside. And also note the relative openness. The sodium channel is normally closed. Potassium channel is often open, more often open than is the sodium channel. And the chloride channel is variable. All three channels can be controlled by voltage or ligands. All three channels can be controlled by voltage or ligands. Although the chloride is primarily ligand, not so much voltage. Page 6, page 7 now, ladies and gentlemen. Okay. Now, the potassium leak channels generally open, but eventually open them even more. But with them open, more potassium exists in the interior and the exterior because they're pumped. Chloride ions have a higher concentration outside than inside the cell. Why? Well, that's to help maintain some sort of electrochemical balance. The charges, if you note, are on the outside of the cell. Is positive. Charge on the outside of the cell is positive, and the chloride ion is trying to maintain some sort of electrochemical charge balance. So that's why there's more chloride on the outside than the inside in general. But This is not perfect, and the charges don't match exactly. Therefore, you've got this negative charge on the inside and positive charge on the outside. Okay. All right. Now, that's why the calcium chloride ions have a higher concentration on the outside than the inside. Because that chloride channel actually, well, never mind, I won't say that. I don't know that for certain. Now, I want you to underline this. Calcium ions are 1 times 10 to the minus 7th in the interior of the cell and 1 times 10 to the minus 3 on the outside of the cell. So there's about a 1,000-fold difference between the outside of the cell and the cytoplasm. Now, I'd like for you to say specifically the interior of the cell. Circle it and say cytoplasm of the cell. Cytoplasm. Because there are certain membrane-bound organelles that do contain higher concentrations of calcium that are actually inside the cell, in the interior. And they play a role in calcium being a second messenger. A second messenger. Now, we actually can calculate pretty accurately the resting potential that you saw there of the two, the sodium. If you notice, the net resting potential was negative 60 millivolts. Did you note that? Okay. You need to be aware of that, because that has a role to play in the... This is the net contribution of all the charges here. This is on the previous page. The net contribution of all the various charges, the sodium, potassium, and chlorine, give you a net of 60, negative 60. The Nernst equation deals with one ion at a time, although we can have multiple ions with it, but that's a different handout. All right, so here's the Nernst equation. That's potential difference. R is the gas constant. T is the absolute temperature in Kelvin. Faraday constant, the charge of the ion. And then these are the concentrations inside and outside. So this Nernst equation gives you some feeling for how the difference in concentration across that membrane gives you a voltage difference. So if we were to take a look at potassium, for example, the potassium is 139 on the inside and 4 on the outside. The permeability coefficient, and we'll talk about that later, that doesn't have anything to do with the Nernst equation. If you were to look at this at, I don't know if this is 25 degrees Celsius or 37 degrees Celsius. I think it's 25 degrees Celsius. If you were to look at this at 25 degrees Celsius, this factor right here would reduce, and a charge of 1, by the way, would reduce to this number, and you multiply it by the log of 4 over 139, you get negative 91 millivolts out of it. And so the contribution of potassium to the net voltage is, in fact, negative 91. If you were to do the calculations, and I would actually like for you to, if you would do this for Monday, just underneath here, in this open space right here, I'd like for you to calculate the voltage charge for the sodium and the chloride. The sodium and the chloride. And you don't need, again, the permeability coefficients. You only need the ratio of these two things. And you can use this number right here. Just plug in the log concentrations, and you'll get an approximate voltage contribution for each of those three. We will, like I said, we're going to go into some detail about the relative concentration, about the Nernst equation and how to do that. I just wasn't able to duplicate that today because of a broken. Now, I'm going to look at this number 1 and this number 2 and that number 3 are related to these three comments right here. So you can put the 1, 2, and 3 there and write this in if you don't mind. As you know, and I mentioned earlier that from the previous diagram, that the potassium ion channel was typically open. And therefore, you have a permeability coefficient that's relatively high. The units of the coefficient are not all that important because we are not going to be doing any calculations with the permeability coefficient. But you can see the relative value of the coefficient. You've got potassium is 500, sodium is 5, chlorine is 10, and the organic ions are 0. Zero. So this allowed by leak channel, so that leak channel, which is normally, quote, open, has that high permeability. For 2 and 3, they too have leak channels. Those are the channels I mentioned earlier, the ones that are voltage or ligand controlled. But they do leak a little, not much. The inorganic ions have no channels. The membrane is impermeable to these ions, and thus they don't contribute any voltage at all. Do you remember that from physics, the voltage is equal to what? V equals IR, where I is the what? Current, and R is the what? Resistance. So this is a silly thing, but in order to have a voltage, you have to have current moving. You also have to have some resistance. Both of these, you can't have one without the other. But any time the resistance is zero, the current is zero, the voltage is, of course, zero. This is why, notice, the permeability coefficient for organic ions is zero. And that would mean which of these two is going to be zero? The I. And therefore, that's why, from a very simple physics point of view, the organic anions, which have no leak pores, they do have transport proteins, but they don't move enough of those organic anions to create any kind of voltage that's worth anything. This is 1, 2, and 3, which relate to these 1, 2, and 3 right here. Sorry. 1, 2, and 3, and the 2 captures both the number 5 and the number 10, related to the 5 and number 10. All right, so you'll do the calculation for potassium and sodium right in here for using the Nernst equation for Monday, will you? I may pick on one of you to write it up on the board. So be prepared. From, of course, the Lion King. Thank you very much. Now, the neuron has specialized voltage-gated ion channels and ligand-gated ion channels for both sodium and potassium ions used by the neuron to create the action potential within the neuron is stimulated. Here's the overview of the action potential. Some of you have seen this recently. Some of you have not. That's okay. That's why we're going through this review. Action potential. And you need to recall these four steps. There's any number of questions I can ask about these four steps. I don't even have a caption for it because we're going to go through creating a caption right now. Okay, so let's take a look at, notice if you would, each of these inner diagrams are numbered. So there's a number 1, and you go down, there's a number 2, and you go up and over, there's a number 3, and down and down and lower, there's a number 4. Then in between the symbolized membranes include two charts that talk about the action potential, and the other one is the ion conductivity. Ion conductivity. So, at rest, what do you see here? This is number 1 at rest. Let's see. At number 1, and when it's at rest, the sodium channel is closed. You still have a high concentration of sodium on the outside and low on the inside, but the channel is closed. The star-shaped ATPase is pumping, moving sodium out and potassium in. The potassium gate is open more than the sodium gate is, but still not. But the sodium gate is still closed more than the potassium gate. In comes an action potential. You can't tell it, but as you see here, in number 1, the negative charges are uniformly on the inside and positive charges are uniformly on the outside. A charge reversal comes in and creates a temporary negative charge on the outside and positive charge on the inside. So it's traveling down the membrane. Anybody familiar with what a capacitor is? What is it? What is a capacitor? I'm sorry, what? Yeah, it stores charges, doesn't it? Yeah. And the physical part of it is that there is a positive plate, a negative plate, in which the negative charges accumulate, and there's a dielectric material here. It used to be that the dielectric material was air. I wish I could show you an old radio. I can't, but I wish I could. And they had variable capacitors in which there were metal plates that moved in between each other and changed the capacitance of that, a variable capacitor. But the membrane in a cell can be thought of as also a capacitor, in which the dielectric material turns out to be plasma membrane. So the fact, you know, the question is, well, how, in part at least, one of the questions, you got these positive charges here, negative charges here, why don't they wander off? Well, they don't just diffuse because they sense the presence of the opposite charge across the dielectric material or across the plasma membrane. So this is actually a capacitor. And the capacitor is sensitive enough in such a way that it can reverse the voltage and travel down the capacitance, down the dielectric constant, till it runs into a voltage-gated sodium-potassium charge protein. So this is what's happened here. The charge has been temporarily reversed. The voltage-gated material here, the sodium channel, opens up. And here you can see this. You see, here's number one. Now I'm looking at the action potential graph. Looking at the action potential graph, which is the top graph in the middle of the figure. And you can see the number one, which is that first figure on the upper left, is related to the number one in that middle of the action potential graph, right next to the rising voltage. Number two is where you now have the reverse in voltage, where it's positive on the outside and negative on the inside, negative on the outside and positive on the inside, which is a reverse of what it normally is, this has to deal with the total membrane potential, and it's negative here and inside, and so there's a reverse, and so this becomes a little negative on the outside. The change is such that it creates a positive charge, net positive charge. The sodium is rushing in. The potassium has not begun to move out, and you've got a change in the voltage. And here you see the action potential is actually now positive. The membrane in that region now is now positively voltaged. What happens then is the potassium then on step three begins to react. The sodium gate closes, and the potassium gate opens and begins to try to restore the resting potential. And you can see that under the ion conductivity. In the early part of the action potential, there's a sharp rise in the sodium conduction and a very quick, sharp close. And so the sodium gate pops open, and then it pops shut. Doink, doink. And then the potassium gate, which responds to the change in voltage, opens slower, closes slower. And as the potassium rushes out, it reestablishes the resting potential. And typically what happens here is that the gate is slow, the potassium gate is slow to close, and it allows slightly too much potassium out and creates a hyperpolarization situation where it's actually temporarily has a higher voltage difference, a negative 80 millivolts than normal. But eventually it comes back to its normal condition. So you're going to need to be able to discuss this with me about the timing and the various gates opening and closing.
So at step three, that really
wide open.
Yeah. Wide open. So the width of the arrow indicates the gate, the amount of conduction of that particular thing. And so I don't know if what it shows here on your sodium. Is there a very good diagram for the sodium? Yeah, it's pretty well. The diagram for the sodium on number 4 has disappeared in the poor duplicating of it. But basically, what you find here is this sodium is actually back now to the same conduction or gap or opening as number 1. And so this is now back to the same rest. Basically, 1 and 4 are about should be about the same in terms of the width of their conductions and the voltages and so on. You need to recall these 4 steps. And we're getting close to home. Now, what happens then with the action potential itself? What happens when it reaches a nerve synaptic bouton, as it says? The action potential itself is an all-or-nothing event in the neuron. That's right. If you are going to have an action potential sent down the axon, you have it. In other words, there's not various strengths of action potential that are going down the axon. It's either all or nothing. And whether it goes or doesn't go is integrated at the axon hillock. The action potential moves away from the cell body toward the synaptic junction. The events that occur at the synaptic junction allow the electrical signal to be translated into a chemical signal, which is then translated back into electrical signal by events initiated at the postsynaptic cell. All right, now that this is a cholinergic synapsis, that means it deals with acetylcholine, which is the model for which all synaptic events were formed. This is the ultimate. This is the paradigm that all nerve cells, all action potential was created. Since it's acetylcholine, the vast majority of times the postsynaptic membrane is dealing with muscle tissue, muscle cells, but not always. Acetylcholine is a neurotransmitter in a variety of other locations. So here comes the action potential, number 1. Number 2, notice, what did I say about the concentration of calcium inside versus outside? The calcium concentration higher on the outside or higher on the inside? It's on the outside. The calcium concentration is higher on the outside of the cell than on the inside of the cell. And I have to put a little asterisk by that comment. Please note that there are certain membranes inside the cell that capture and hold relatively higher concentrations of calcium. And those can be used, if the release of that calcium is triggered by an event, can be used as thought of as a second messenger. So calcium is now known as a second messenger. The first messenger in this case is the action potential. The second message is the calcium as it comes into the cell. The other most common second messenger you've met is cyclic AMP. The cyclic AMP is the first second messenger you've met. Now, calcium is the second messenger you've met. The calcium streams into the synaptic cleft region. The synaptic cleft region. As the calcium level increases, it binds to a variety of proteins at the end of the synaptic bouton, or at the synaptic cleft. The capture or binding of calcium triggers a variety of regulated steps that allow, at least in this case for acetylcholine, to fuse with the synaptic membrane and release their stored acetylcholine into the synaptic cleft. That's step 3. Step 4 is that the acetylcholine diffuses immediately into that cleft. There are receptors that are designed to bind that acetylcholine. That's box inside the larger box. It says nicotinic acetylcholine receptor. And so there's a binding site for acetylcholine on this receptor. It's a voltage, it's a ligand-gated sodium channel. It's a ligand-gated, and the ligand in this case is acetylcholine. As acetylcholine binds this receptor on the postsynaptic membrane, the receptor opens up, allows sodium to enter, which initiates an action potential. So step 6 or step 5 is the action potential. If this is a dendrite, it then sends that signal into the cell body where that signal is accumulated and integrated at the axon hillock of that cell nerve cell, and the various inputs from the various dendrocytes come in, and eventually the cell decides to trigger or not trigger based on the inputs, both excitatory and inhibitory at the dendrocytes. Okay, now, of course, acetylcholine is a very powerful neurotransmitter. How in the world do you turn the thing off? And we'll talk about that in detail in a little bit. Matter of fact, we can take it right now, although, well, I think we got 30 seconds. So, this synaptic cleft is a site for a variety of pharmacological activities. That's an understatement, ladies and gentlemen. All those Xanax and Zoloft and what's another one? Valium and so on. All those compounds are acting at the synaptic cleft and are used to manipulate the relative levels of various neurotransmitters. And, of course, the most famous and best one, of course, is serotonin as a neurotransmitter. How many of you like serotonin? Raise your hand if you like serotonin. Yes. That one, for some reason, seems to be the wellness, sense of contentment neurotransmitter. And when you have higher levels of serotonin in your central nervous system, you have a sense of contentment and some other things. Anyway, so we will talk about what happens to acetylcholine in a little bit. Actually, we'll talk about the details of it a little later, but we'll finish this up on Monday. Now then, you guys need to come by and pick up one of these take-home quizzes that I forgot to do last week. Take one down, pass it around, 99 quizzes on the wall. And I hope there's enough. Now, is Sung Mi still sick? Oh, there you are. I need to talk with you before you leave. Yes. Yes, absolutely. Oh, I'm not the advisor signature. Well, I guess it can be that way. That's Dr. Hayes. What?
He's advisor as well as one
signer. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
I can have Hayes.
Why don't you have Hayes sign that just for his own benefit? Okay. Yeah, are we out? Looks like we're out. Okay, come with me to my office, and we'll print some out right now. Yeah, there you go. Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you. Oh, it's still going, isn't it?